For oral argument on Clark County School District versus Las Vegas Review Journal, case number 73525. At the outset, we would note that Justice Pickering is participating from Las Vegas as to this matter. Additionally, we received a filing yesterday from the Review Journal, or reported filing, as to some additional information. The court is not going to accept that at this time. We are going to stay with the record that was presented to the district court as to the argument this day. With that, counsel, if you wish to reserve any time for rebuttal, please so state when you approach.
Thank you, Your Honor. Adam Honey, Department of School District. I previously reserved 3 minutes for rebuttal with your staff.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Justices. Today we have an important public policy issue before you that may greatly affect the nation's fifth largest school district's ability to comply with Title VII's requirements or duties to investigate complaints of discrimination and in turn protect students and employees. And of course, that issue is whether the investigative files of the school district's Office of Diversity and Affirmative Action in regards to allegations of discrimination by a school board member against employees should be disclosed under the Nevada Chapter 239 of Public Record Laws, or the Public Record Act. Now, I say the nation's fifth largest school.
Office, an office within the school district?
Correct.
I'm a little bit unclear about that an acronym, but that is that's an office within your operation, right?
Correct. Due to the great size of the school district, we literally have our own office, which might be considered akin to the Nevada Equal Rights Commission, or on the federal level, the EEOC, Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. But due to our great size, we literally have our own office. That's all they do. Well, majority of what they do, and they are the only group that handles these types of discrimination complaints and investigate them. Additionally, I say students and employees, but potentially anybody that comes into contact with the district or the school could potentially be a complainant. So I want to point out that I say the nation's fifth largest school district, but we're talking about 320,000 students approximately, 30,000 employees as of this last school year. And of course, that number will only grow over time once this court reaches a decision that may likely set public policy onward as we go into the future. Put it into further context, in 2015, the population of Reno was 240,000 people. So just our current students and current employees is 50% larger than the population of Reno from 2015.
As the matter before the court this day, the legislature has enacted a Public Records Act. How does this factor with that Public Records Act of disclosure, the openness that's required?
Thank you. And you're speaking in regards to Chapter 239, the Public Records Act. And the portion of that act that I believe the Review Journal will lean on today, that the district court leaned on, was this liberally construed language, that the need to produce records should be liberally construed in favor of producing records. But when they did that, they didn't read the statute in its entirety, because 239.0101, after dozens of specific statutes that they identify as rendering documents pertaining to those as confidential, for example, a NERC file would remain confidential unless it ever went to hearing, and those things rarely go to hearing. I think it serves as a good motivation for people to resolve those disputes in order to keep those things confidential. But at the end of those dozens of specific statutes, we have the otherwise declared by law to be confidential language. They don't use the word statutes, they use the word law. And a case law from our country tells us that laws are broader than statutes. Laws include ordinances, codes, and regulations. And now, of course, the Nevada legislature enacted NRS 386.350, I believe, which empowers the school board to set regulations and policies to conduct its business to educate kids. In doing that, the school district has enacted regulations. Now, the main regulation at bar here is Regulation 4110 of the school district, which says investigations of discrimination shall remain confidential. And then it gives a couple exceptions. And one says, unless it meets a significant other need or to comply with law. Now, at the lower court level, they interpreted the comply with law to mean, oh, you have to comply with 239 and produce the records. I see that differently. To me, that regulation entirely complies with 239, because 239.10 section 1 allows for it. If we were to read this regulation in such a way that we rendered it meaningless, or that we read chapter 239's liberally construed language and disregard the otherwise declared by law language, then we haven't read these statutes in their entirety. And in regards to the regulation, we've rendered the regulation useless, because it would never, with that interpretation, keep these types of records confidential. And that's problematic, because then we have an incongruent system or situation where under the EEOC guidelines, it goes without saying that an employer has a duty to investigate discrimination, allegations of discrimination. And it even says that those documents should remain confidential. Now, I understand that I'm referring in my brief, and I refer to it now when I speak to you, in regards to guidance or guidelines from the EEOC. But I believe it's within your purview as the highest court of the state to set the public policy. And those guidelines from the EEOC are important, because we don't follow those guidelines.
I appreciate your comment. It's just a recent trend of cases, I'm sure you've noticed, has been for transparency and openness, and the Lyon County case on the cell phones that Justice Sherry wrote, and some others. Here in this case, Judge Williams took this material in camera, I understand, reviewed it, made his conclusions regarding confidentiality, made his balancing tests about the names of the teachers, the victims, and all involved. He was pretty thorough on it. So how did he abuse his discretion?
I think where his discretion is abused is those other cases that you mentioned. None of those cases involved discrimination and the purposes of the EEOC guidelines and the purpose of having people report discrimination. Because we want to protect people.
They conceded, essentially, or at least that's how I understand it. Maybe she'll tell me that's not her position. They conceded that the names of the complainants would be redacted. What's the public interest in redacting the name of the school or the principal? How does that chill a harassment report?
Well, the reason for that is there's one principal. So if we redact the name and we leave Principal Clark High School, I don't think it takes a very clever person to figure out who the principal of Clark High School was during a particular academic year. So that's one of our concerns. Does that make sense?
So you're saying to the extent that a school administrator is a complainant, it would tend to reveal it? I'm not sure I understand your point.
A complainant or a victim or a witness. Any regards in which they were in the file, potentially, if we just redact, again, just the name, but leave a job title. For example, we have a very limited number of deans. Smaller size of the school, middle school or an elementary school, the less number of deans. So if we say the dean or assistant principal at an elementary school, again, there's only going to be one. And so if we take out their name and say, oh yeah, this complainant is the vice principal at, I'm making this up, Smith Elementary School, people will be able to identify who that is. In the Ninth Circuit cases that I cited, it recognizes that the stigma, embarrassment, and retaliation are legitimate risk, and that these things do occur. And I think common sense tells us all that it does, too. And I'm concerned the far-reaching impact of a ruling that says any investigations of discrimination are now going to no longer be confidential, and we're going to have to turn those over, that people are going to quit reporting, they're going to be chilled from reporting, and it, in fact, ends up being a step backwards. To me, the days are long gone where people that are discriminated against, victims, suffer in silence. And I'm concerned that we're going to take a step backwards. And it's also more concerning to me is We're stepping backwards specifically to school districts, specifically CCSD. Because under the facts of this case, if you were a state employee, these records would be confidential under the Nevada Administrative Code, which, unlike the regulations for CCSD that are created by certain elected officials, the NAC codes are generally created by people that maybe a department head or agency head is appointed by the governor, and then it's just state employees that are creating this. They aren't even elected officials. The elected officials of the Clark County School District is elected officials of the largest county in the state. And I think that's significant difference. And that's what I mentioned earlier about it being incongruent, where we have some people would be protected, state employees, yet district employees, or potentially even district students, if a decision was written so broadly that all of our ODAA files were now open, we have kids that make claims of discrimination, and potentially those files would have to be turned over. Then we get into all sorts of different things. We get into federal FERPA law, we get into student privacy rights, and all sorts of those different things. And it really opens a big can of worms because we're treating distinct groups differently, state employees, school district employees.
So how would you want a disposition drafted in your favor? What would it say?
It would say that consistent with long-held public policy, both at the state and federal level, in which there's never, we don't have any evidence or any cases cited that shows where this type of discrimination conduct investigation file has ever been turned over in this state.
So the other side, media would get nothing, is what you're saying.
They've gotten 174 pages today. What they wouldn't get is this limited file from the Office of Diversity and Affirmative Action, the group that was specifically instructed to investigate these allegations against a school board member.
And Judge Williams did not go for that type of disposition?
No. And the thing that's troubling to me is even the redactions that he allowed were so limited. The only people he would allow redacted were support staff, students, and direct victims of sexual harassment.
But that's not an only. Those sound pretty complete to me.
Well, if you refer back to my brief, you'll see of the 39 names in the documents, only 9 get redacted under that. Because the fact of the matter is, our school board trustees don't deal very often with support staff members and with students. They go to functions with students and such, but they deal with the superintendent, the superintendent's office, the executive branch, the executive staff, the school area superintendents, school principals, and none of those people are protected. And the vast majority of the people identified by the prior order won't be redacted are the 30 out of 39 all in that group.
You seem to be asking us to flip the burden on its head from what the legislature started with. They've put the burden, in this case, on the district to show there's authority not to provide it, not on the individuals asking for it.
Correct. And I think the authority that we have, again, the EEOC guidelines, public policy, and then we have the regulations. I don't think there's any argument that the regulations aren't enforceable laws. We have other Nevada Supreme Court cases, BB, back in the 70s, where it was a regulation in regards to retirement at a certain age. And in that case, the court didn't look at it and question whether or not the regulation was enforceable or whether or not the regulation was legal. They looked at whether or not the regulation was in line with other labor laws. And so to me, that tells me that the regulations are viable laws that should be recognized. And I believe that the regulation 4110 that I cite to clearly says, and it's clear what the purpose is. The purpose is to protect victims and witnesses of discrimination, to encourage reporting of it. Because clearly, in the 21st century, we want to eliminate and reduce the amount of discrimination that occurs to people of all types and varieties, not just in this particular case.
Mr. Allen, you have a minute and about 40 seconds left for rebuttal. Do you wish to keep that?
Yes, thank you.
May it please the court, Maggie McCletchie for the Las Vegas Review-Journal. To justify secrecy in this case, CCSD repeatedly complains that it cannot control the trustee child. While CCSD could actually do more than it suggests, CCSD is correct that it is ultimately the voters who get to decide if Trustee Child is fit for office. The public has the right to evaluate, first, Trustee Child's conduct, and second, CCSD's handling of the allegations about Trustee Child's conduct.
Counsel, how do we deal with the legal precedent of whose burden it is? Counsel wishes to put the burden on you to allow this. The law seems to say otherwise, but what's your position as to that?
My position is the law is clear that they have a burden and a heavy burden. In fact, NRS 239.0113 makes plain that they have the burden of establishing that a record is confidential by a preponderance of the evidence. And while I don't think any of the authority they rely on is law that exempts a record from the Public Records Act, the burden in NRS 239.0113 does clearly require that they establish by a preponderance of evidence that even a bylaw exemption does apply to the specific records at issue.
Why doesn't the regulation qualify under the subsection of exemptions that counsel referred to in his initial remarks and argues in his brief?
The regulation doesn't apply because it's according to CCSD's own regulations, they say that they're guidelines and directives. I think this case is very different, for example, from City of Sparks v. Reno Newspapers, where this court held that the Nevada Administrative Code, I think it's NAC 453A, that it exempted certain records regarding medical marijuana establishments from the Public Records Act. But in saying that this administrative code did exempt those records, this court made very clear that it was based actually on the statute, NRS 453A.370, subsection 5 in that case, specifically mandated that DPBH enact regulations and that in so doing, that DPBH maintain certain records as confidential. So the other reason, too, is we have a mandate from the legislature that public records are supposed to be presumed confidential. If this court were to hold that governmental entities can enact regulations enacted exempting themselves from the Public Records Act, that would become the exception to the Public Records Act that would swallow the rule. Finally, none of the regulations that they rely on actually explicitly make these records confidential. In the City of Sparks case, we have an entirely different scenario. Here, for example, as they concede, their regulation 411010 pertains to sexual harassment investigations says that their records can be released to serve other significant needs or comply with law. There is nothing in CCSD's regulations to say these specific records of diversity, when they go through investigations, are always confidential. And if they did, I don't think they have the authority to do that, and there's no clear legislative authority or mandate for them to exempt records from the Public Records Act.
But if I understand counsel's argument, he's saying that under EEOC guidelines and other statutes, let's just take the more obvious one, the name of a student complainant in a discriminatory investigation is otherwise confidential. So why wouldn't this court, read the regulation as saying, in effect, that the contents of the investigation is confidential to the extent that other sources, such as federal statutes or EEOC guidelines, protect that information from disclosure? Wouldn't that analysis be akin to the City of Sparks case?
No, because that would be a broad reading of an exception to the Public Records Act, which would fly in the face of the mandates in the NPRA that any restriction on access must be construed narrowly. Well,
do you think you have access to the students' names who complained?
We actually said that we did not need the student names.
That's a different question. I'm asking you whether you believe, based on your reading that you just discussed, that you have a legal right under the Open Records Act to the names of the students who complained.
I think the difference with the scenario that you're giving is there is actually explicit regulation on point. FERPA, the EEOC guidelines are not explicit regulation. They also don't mandate confidentiality forever. And in fact, they also express the...
So now we're getting to the point.
I'm sorry.
FERPA protects the students' names. Are there other statutes cited by the school district that protect other names that they seek to protect, like the name of the principal, like the teachers, like witnesses who were included in these investigations?
CCSD has failed to establish by a preponderance of the evidence that any claim of confidentiality applies. That's the first step of the analysis. Then if it's a non-statutory basis, which I think theirs are, they need to show that that clearly outweighs the need. But with regard to the first prong, they have not come forward with evidence. The district court reviewed these documents in camera, and he made a factual determination as to these specific records. And in fact, CCSD at some points has argued that FERPA applied to these records, and the order allows for that. But I don't think any records were ever actually redacted. The point is that CCSD...
The basis of the district court's decision, the application of the Daunray balancing test?
The basis of the court's decision was first that CCSD did not meet its burden of establishing that any of these claims apply. It's my view that CCSD misconstrues the Daunray balancing test when it claims, for example, that under Daunray you just weigh interest. That's not correct. All that Daunray allows for, and as this court is aware, Daunray has been drastically changed in light of the 2007 amendments to the NPRA as well as this court's case law. But all that Daunray does is allow for the assertion of some other claim of confidentiality, a common law claim, for example. And once they assert that claim and establish by a preponderance of the evidence that it applies, then you do the balancing test. And how that balancing test is carried out is now different. Here, from the records and from CCSD's own log, I don't even know what records are actually at issue. For example, it says that it pertains to sexual harassment complaints. They lump everything together. Their log in the appendix doesn't make clear and doesn't follow this court's mandates and yet the NPRA statute's mandates to explicitly explain why each record and part thereof is confidential. Another point about the FERPA records, Your Honor, is that if in Nevada a record is confident, part of a record is confidential, the analysis doesn't end there. A governmental entity has to redact the record. CCSD did not come forward with a preponderance of the evidence to justify redactions. In fact, it's my view that because the RJ didn't contest it, the district court went further than it needed to because there was no evidence supporting any of CCSD's claims. It's not clear from the record, from the evidence that CCSD puts forth, that there is any actual claim of confidentiality applies. They instead do one memo and cite to that for a number of entries on the law. And I don't think that meets the burden of specificity that this court has articulated. I also think with regard to the policy arguments that CCSD makes, I don't agree with the district that this court can change policy insofar as the NPRA has policies stated in its terms. It says that it was enacted to further the interests of democracy. Consistent with that, Judge Williams said, the voters are the only ones who can make the decisions about whether he's fit for office, and so the voters have the right to make the decisions here. Here, in this case especially, the mandates of the Public Records Act are especially important, but their claims that horrible things will occur if somehow this court upholds the district court's rulings, I don't think they're well-founded. And their speculation and their argument of counsel. For example, counsel says, well, only 9 employees will be protected. The first time I knew about that was in their opening brief. They haven't come forward with specific evidence. But they also haven't shown that publicity into the investigation is a bad thing and will diminish complaints. In fact, with the Me Too movement, I think we've seen the opposite. I also think that we've seen the opposite with the RJ's reporting. There was an increase in attention on these issues, and it seems to me from the records we have received that more people came forward. CCSD also hasn't established that the records at issue, in fact, are currently not in the public domain. For example, some of the records people may have entered settlements for the district. And it's very important that the public have full access. There's an election in November. It's up to the voters. CCSD keeps saying they can't do much to protect employees at CCSD from Trustee Child because he's above them, because he's a trustee. But it's the voters who can. And despite the fact that CCSD repeatedly says that it can't control Trustee Child, If CCSD had had its way, I think it's important to point out that the voters who can make the decisions about trustee Child would never have known about any of the allegations. The CCSD didn't release any of this information voluntarily. In December of 2016, the Review Journal reported on a memo and guidelines it received, and it's been fighting to get the full access to the records about the allegations ever since. CCSD argues that they don't need to produce further records because the RJ has enough information has been released. But in light of CCSD's history of not coming forward with this information, it's especially inappropriate for this court to accept that kind of argument. More broadly, it's not up to a governmental entity.
Just briefly, how is you've talked about the public interest about an elected official. How is that interest furthered by identifying the school name or that? So a public official has been accused of sexually harassing students, or insert whatever the allegation is. How is that public interest furthered by saying at Smith Elementary, or, you know, putting the names in the public record?
Well, just as a technical matter, the Review Journal actually doesn't have the burden of showing that release of information is in the public interest. The presumption is that a record is in the public domain and that the public, including the media, should have access to it. I think the issue in this case, in this specific case, on the facts of this case, is that CCSD didn't come forward with evidence that releasing the name of any principal or the address of any principal or the school of any specific principal would cause risk.
Sure, but you said how important it is that the voters have this information to make their determination at the ballot box. So my question to you is, how does that further their decision at the ballot box?
How does the information about the school that a principal is at, the particular name
or the particular name of the school or individual, how does that further that if you know there's allegations against him as it relates to a school?
Well, the Review Journal is entitled to information about where allegations occur so they can follow up and do further. In addition, I think that if there are allegations of misconduct that occurred, for example, it's not clear from the log what sexual harassment and what of the log is it. But one of the concerns about trustee Child is that he went onto school campuses and said things like, snitches get stitches. If I were a parent in his district, I would want to know that this occurred at my school. And so I think, again, the presumption is that the public, the records are public, and I do think that the general rule in favor of access does favor the public interest. Is it possible that on some facts and some evidence that some information about a school name, for example, if the principal were a direct victim of sexual harassment, is it possible that that information would merit redacting? I would say yes, it is possible. However, the important point is that in this case, CCSD failed to come forward with evidence justifying why such specific redactions are possible.
Well, can I ask you a question in that regard? We've been talking about public policy, and you just made a point, snitches get stitches. One of the fears here is there's going to be intimidation and retaliation. That obviously supports that position.
So, Your Honor, I think that the district court's order actually addressed that by allowing redaction of certain information. And, in fact, I think the history of this case shows that some of the emails that were attached in the appendix, they provide some information was redacted of certain complainants and some wasn't. Nothing horrible has occurred. In addition, CCSD says in its brief that the only thing that it can do to protect employees from trustee Child is to maintain total secrecy. But that just isn't the case. For example, people were told by trustee Child, I'm the boss. So one way to protect employees is to go to employees and say, no, he's not the boss. And to do actually what CCSD did, which is enact guidelines prohibiting trustee Child from going onto campuses and interacting directly with employees. And again, this is an evidentiary issue.
Well, and with witnesses, knowing that there's a potential for even violence based upon that statement, isn't that a concern?
It could be a concern, but speculation by counsel that such things could occur is not enough. What we didn't get in the declaration of Mr. Cole is anything that established that any of the specific records at issue would identify people who had voiced those concerns.
So what do we tell our district judges in a situation like this with the public records and with a school district? What do we tell?
I'm almost out of time, Your Honor. May I run up and finish your question?
You can respond to this question.
Thank you. We tell our district courts to keep doing exactly what Judge Williams did, which was to apply this court's case law and the clear language in the NPRA to the facts at hand, conduct an in-camera review if necessary, and make specific factual evaluations about whether or not the claim of confidentiality has been established, and if it has, whether it outweighs the presumption in waiver of access. All of this court's case law.
Anything additional?
No.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Counsel, we're going to give you an even 2 minutes.
And if you could, like, respond to the question that I asked, what should we tell the judges in this situation that Judge Williams did wrong?
That he didn't protect the students and employees consistent with how other employees in the state of Nevada are, and how people are protected. If they made the exact same report to NERC or the EEOC, these records would be private. The only place they aren't private is when you report it to the Clark County School District. So if you want to discriminate people, go be a trustee or go work for the school district, because if you report it to the ODAA, it's not going to be confidential. Don't do it at the state, because that'll be confidential. Go do it at the school district. And that's my concern. It's disparate treatment of a different class of people working. And in regards to the comments that it's speculative, that harm or embarrassment or stigma, it's right in my brief. The Ninth Circuit has held that isn't speculative, that it's a legitimate risk. And due to her testimony that no one has been harmed since this time, is patently, she can't know if whether or not it happened or not. I'm not going to sit here and blow anybody's confidentiality, but I don't think anybody knows whether or not retaliation has been taking place or not. And I certainly know that Ms. McClatchy doesn't know whether something has or hasn't happened in that regard. I believe preponderance of the evidence is met when we have regulations that protect us, whether they be 4110 or our personnel records that say personnel records will be confidential. That meets the preponderance of evidence. I think she misstates when she says you have to have a preponderance of evidence and do a balancing test. That's not what the case law says. That's not what Gibbons says. It's if there isn't a statute or law on point, then you go to the balancing test.
What do we do, counsel, in the context of a case where the regulation is perceived to swallow the rule? That seems to be one of the arguments being offered by the Review Journal, that your interpretation, your requested interpretation of the regulation by this court is that you don't have to produce anything. And that includes material that is otherwise unprotected by federal statutes or other statutes that deal with discrimination issues.
And my position is that it should be interpreted in a manner consistent with protections given to other people with other similar organizations such as NERC or EEOC or the state employees. It's unfathomable to me that the school district employees would be treated differently, that it's a different bar confidentiality when you report these discriminatory conduct by other people. Thank you, Justices.
Court thanks counsel for their arguments this day, shedding light on this interesting issue of law. With that, this matter will stand submitted.